this week on Life and Faith.
Well, I was 16 and was expecting my child very unexpectedly, and remembered thinking at the end of my pregnancy, what am I going to call this baby? And after, you know, a whole lot of the turmoil and trauma and things had settled down, and I actually went to a baby name book. And then I thought, oh, I should look up what my name means. And then it said Bernadette means brave as a bear. And I thought, you know what? That's just what I have to be. Somehow I have to be brave as a bear.
We have entered into an amusing ourselves to death moment in history.
It doesn't make sense to me. If there is God, God's supposed to be free.
I was 100% sure that I was sacrificing on the altar of truth my only chance for happiness in this world.
Miracles don't necessarily change anybody's mind. It just gets their attention.
And so I had to run with my child on my back, the ISA army coming behind us.
I said, gee, Uncle George, this is luxurious for a communist. Son, he said, nothing's too good for the worker, nothing.
Welcome to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. I'm Simon Smart.
And I'm Justine Toe. And it strikes me that bravery may be up there with love as perhaps the most important quality to have as a parent. I know I can certainly identify with that. I remember being handed my newborn, this scrawny, very red, a mewling baby, and having no idea what to do with him and being frightened that I was now in charge of this new person. Was that your experience at all, or am I just weird, Simon?
No, it is. It's very nerve-wracking. I remember bringing our daughter home, you know, first day or whatever, and it was time for the bath, and
then
the hospital,
Dad's
the
job,
babies
right?
have been doing. So we had, you know, the towels laid out and the book, literally the book
on how
and,
to, you know,
looking at the instructions of how to hold this baby, which bit to do first. I mean, it is truly terrifying. I mean, I felt like I was barely mature enough to have a baby in my arms, even in my early 30s. So I can't imagine what it would be like to be 16 years old and expecting a baby. But I don't have to, because our guest today is going to tell us all about that. Bernadette Black, or Bernie as she's known, has a really remarkable story, from being a teenage mum to Barnardo's Australian Mother of the Year to CEO of Brave Foundation that supports young mums. Tell us about her, Justine. You had a really good conversation with her.
Yes, I did. And firstly, she's pretty amazing. She'll tell us in her own words what it was like to tell her parents that she was pregnant and what it was like to become a teenage parent in the face of all that stigma and judgment that came her way. But she eventually wrote this book about her experience called Brave Little Bear. And so many young pregnant women read it and contacted her to try to find out about their options for continuing their education after they had had a child. That Brave Foundation was formed in 2009, and it's there to connect young women with support services, employment opportunities, mentors, in fact, giving young women the exact support that Bernie wasn't able to access when she was 16.
And we'll hear more about Brave Foundation a bit later, but first, Bernie takes us back to that moment she realised she was pregnant.
It was so lonely, so scary. It was like my teenage brain couldn't comprehend the consequences and the adult nature of what I was looking at on this pregnancy stick. Like my nana had taught me that if something really bad happened, that you'd say, Jesus, Mary and Joseph, help me. And I remembered before that second blue line began to appear, I think I said that a million times. And then it did appear. And my first thought was about my dad. He'd worked two jobs for me. You know, he didn't finish, he went to year 10 himself, and he wanted us to be able to go to university. He was a cleaner and insurance clerk. My second was about my nana. I didn't even think she'd heard of the word sex, let alone that anyone even had it. And then the third was about my boyfriend's family. And my dad, actually, when I did come home and tell him, I told my mum first, and thankfully she was so gracious for what was about to happen. But Dad went out into the middle of the main road and screamed to the whole of the suburb that his 16-year-old daughter had sex and now was pregnant, and didn't come in till, like, you know, 3 or 4 a.m. that morning. So it was, my beautiful mum was quite incredible, and she made cups of tea for all of us. It was a very stressful time, and she actually couldn't walk for about 6 weeks after that, and we thought she had MS, but it was because of the stress. So you can imagine for me seeing all of this, and I felt like a fly on the wall, actually, because I could see mum not walking, dad really angry. And then my boyfriend's parents was like walking in when we told them like a funeral. And it was just like, oh my goodness, actually, can I do this? And you'd hear these sometimes horror stories, or I don't know whether it was through the prism of stigma of young women that actually, you know, weren't okay. And I couldn't find stories of women that were okay. And that type of feeling was a bit of defeat, that defeated feeling. And I guess for me, in that mixture of emotions and turmoil, I went to, for some reason, a teacher who had a safe place in my heart. His name was Mr. Scheel. I thought he was about 127 years old. In reality, he was probably 25. And but he seemed really strict. And I went to him and I said, you know, my boyfriend and I, you know, this happened. He went to the local state school. I was in a Catholic school, and told him I was upset. And you know, I just said, I don't know what's going to happen. And he just stopped me, settled me down. And he said, Bernadette, the journey might be different now, but the destination can stay the same. And what Mr. Scheel did was he looked at who I was, not at the situation that was happening. And I wouldn't be sitting here having this conversation today, possibly, if Mr. Scheel didn't say those words. So that gave me great strength.
Listening to you speak, it sounds as though you were always going to have Damien, your baby. Yeah. Was there an active choice around that, or is part of the being in a Catholic family like, no, you're having this baby?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, Mum and Dad were, even though Dad was upset, the message I got from them was, this is your body and it's your decision. And I knew they loved me, even though that Dad wasn't showing it with his actions. And so my boyfriend's family, they certainly did not want me to continue with the pregnancy. Seeing all of the outcomes around me, it was a pretty scary time. And so I remembered looking up, you know, you're thinking, how can I do this? If this is how the world looks, how can I do it? I remembered looking up. I mean, this is a while ago, so it was, you know, back in the yellow pages, like the actual print version. And looking in there and thinking, well, what are these options? And seeing them. But the only way I can explain it was, and yes, I did have a faith and a Catholic faith at that time, but it was just like going and brushing my teeth. I didn't even think about it. So, like, I looked at these options, but I didn't engage with those options. I just knew that I would get up, go brush my teeth, and it was like, okay, yes, you can see that. I'm going to go and have this baby. And it was really pragmatic. And so I just kept walking on the journey, and I don't even think anyone ever had a conversation with me. I looked and saw these things, but didn't actually engage with them, and kept walking out my journey. And now that baby's 26. So,
Bernie kept walking her journey, as she says, even in the face of some awful experiences of stigma and being shamed by others.
Yeah, and Justine, we had to cut this part out, but it sounded like her community at her Catholic church just didn't really know what to do with her.
Yeah, that's right. It sounded like they were well-intentioned, but a bit flummoxed by the whole thing. And she said that at some point they asked her not to read the Bible at church once her pregnancy started to show, which, as responses go, is not the worst, but leaves much to be desired.
Yeah, and there were other experiences as well, aside from those that she experienced at church, right?
Yeah, she recounted two episodes in particular. There was one where she was shamed by the lady at the makeup counter for wasting her money on makeup when she had a child to raise. And she also had a bus driver calling her awful names and not helping her onto the bus, presumably when she's got her child with her. And she was trying to make her way to the only adult education place she could get to. So it's pretty disheartening.
Every barrier that would come down to stop me from getting education would. You know, even earlier this year, I'm one of the Australians of the Year, and I had someone of influence come and say to me, you know, just thinking about you and the young women you represent, surely you've made your bed and now you should lie in it.
Now, just to clarify, Bernie was awarded 2019's Tasmanian Australian of the Year for her work with Brave Foundation. And she's still fielding negative comments about teenage parenthood and occasionally accused of glamorising it. But Bernie's emphatic that young people, whether unexpectedly pregnant or not, deserve the same access to education as everyone else.
Nothing more, nothing less, just to have the same and to have a pathway. But then, you know, you'll hear those comments and you'll just be like, oh, we come such a long way, and then you'll hear that. But it's always an opportunity for education. And that's why stigma exists, isn't it? It's often because people aren't associated with the people that they have an idea about, which is unhelpful. And when you can bridge that gap and make sense to that person about why it impacts them, and so for this person, it was about sharing how his taxes actually could be diverted into another area because we're saving the government, you know, funding. It's like, oh, actually that makes sense. Unfortunately, it was another way around, but it was helping him to be able to understand the importance of being able to support an expecting or parenting teen.
You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. Justine is speaking with Bernadette Black, the CEO of Brave Foundation, which aims to build a village of support around pregnant teens. And at this point, you might be wondering just how many teenage parents are out there. Well, according to the 2015 figures from the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare, there were 8,268.
Brave services are available to all those mothers, but in 2018, Brave was awarded $4.4 million by the Australian government to pilot a focused trial with almost 400 teenage mothers. It's meant to connect them to support services, education and employment opportunities, as well as mentors to guide them as they go through their pregnancy and into their child's early years. Now, Brave is currently preparing its final report outlining the results of the trial to date. So while Bernie can't be too specific about its overall socioeconomic impact, she makes the case that young parents need a community of support around them as they navigate teenage parenthood.
How the lay of the land is now, statistically, 79% of teen parents are on long-term welfare. These are the grim facts. There's a higher rate of teenage parents having children that will become teenage parents. These facts are without the interception of education or support pathways. And so what Brave does, it actually creates an opportunity from expecting through to parenting for a young woman or a young man to be on a pathway to connect them to education, their goals, dreams and aspirations, whilst learning, you know, how to pack a nappy bag, how to do driving lessons when you've got a baby, how to socialisation. There are so many things. Getting to maternal and child health appointments. This is the basic level of healthcare in Australia. So to miss out on that is not going to be helpful for any person, but it's not because they don't want to. It's not because they don't care. It's because they're not on a bus route or they don't have a license yet. And so that's what Brave does. It creates those pathways. And so when you see that pathway established, the incidence of children of teenage parents becoming teenage parents in the next generation is drastically reduced because their parents are having the opportunity to reconnect into education. They have reduced risk-taking activities in their lives. And so that creates a whole lot of long-term health, well-being and educational outcomes for the parents, which in turn does the same thing, increases all of those opportunities for their child.
So it sounds like Brave is doing exactly the kind of thing that you didn't have access to when you were pregnant with Damien.
It's quite amazing, really. I sometimes feel like I grasp it, and I certainly had this year some time in. I was encouraged by a very dear friend and mentor of mine to count the cost, the grief, and the celebration of actually realizing that what I looked for and couldn't find has been created and is actually working, and we're seeing amazing growth and impact. And that was something truly I didn't think and I'd let go of. I just thought that maybe it'll be, you know, 150 years time that we might have created the space and the culture to have this conversation and just to not be distracted and get help to these young women that need to have that, and because they want it. They actually have high hopes for their dreams, aspirations and careers. It's just that they haven't known how to reach for them. So it's it makes common sense, really. So it is wonderful in, you know, it's been the 12-year overnight success, really, since Brave Little Bear was written, or 26 if you look at the age of Damien. But to be able to see this in my lifetime is just, you know, it's the call of a life, really. We had our 10 years since we've been incorporated anniversary. Her Excellency in Tasmania, the Governor Kate Warner, celebrated Brave and honoured Brave, and we had 160 guests at that function at Government House, and I started my speech by saying this has been the call of a life. Like, you know, just like to be able to actually see that and hear the stories. We had 17 expecting and parenting teens, mums and dads there that night. And I read out their names. And it's actually about, you know, these 17 women that were at the 10-year anniversary representing some 9,000 women that are, you know, connecting to their dreams, their goals. But we've awarded $70,000 worth of scholarships in the last 11 months. And some of those, we've had five young women that have applied for scholarships for their birth certificate. They've never had their own identity. So you can't even imagine, you know, and their point of origin, their family hasn't deemed it important. So to even, you can't get a job, you can't do anything without identification. But for our incredible mentors nationally, working with these young mums and being able to help them, and so we're equipping them, so we'll do it alongside them to register and to get their birth certificate. And my goodness, you know, applying for a scholarship for that. But it's not even just their registry of birth. It's that they are valued. It's about their identity. It's that they see their name, you know, on a certificate. That brings tears to my eyes because it's that sense of value that each of us as a human being, we actually are valued and we are needed and we all need to play the part in who we are. That's like perhaps one of the smaller things that we might see, but for those parents, it's probably one of the greatest things in their lifetime.
I have read a couple of stories on the Brave Foundation website, stories of women who found themselves in this situation. And I found one where she ended up saying, like after she'd had her child, she said, I wouldn't change anything, you know, if I could go back. Is that, do you feel like that? And is that a common experience? It certainly seems unexpected.
Yeah. Well, look, I do feel like that. And even with the conversation before that we had about stigma, but for me personally, when I look at my story, my goodness, I look at my boy and he's one of the bravest people I know. He's, you know, he's doing his master's in, you know, it's going to sound like a bragging mum. He's doing his master's in teaching. But he literally, it's so funny actually, he works in a school purposely. He's won a scholarship to work in a school that's those most disadvantaged schools in Australia. Anyway, and he's also done a Bachelor of Music. So he's an incredible musician. So he teaches music and he's just taken 10 kids from his school to LA to go on this small tour that are the most disadvantaged kids in his school. But I will literally get these phone calls, and I've had them a couple of times off these kids, and there'll be this random number that'll get my mobile number and I'll pick up and I'll say, hi, is this Damo's mum? Is this Damo's mum that had him like when she was 16? And Damo gave me your number and because we're going to have a baby and we need to get some help. And I'm like, oh, hi, mate. Yeah, I am Damo's mum. There is, you know, we have 22 staff, sorry. And there's a, you know, we have incredible mentors, but I love that. Like there's a process, but I love that because it's sort of like it's come full circle.
For some people, even access to the services of something like the Brave Foundation won't be enough, let's say, to shift their kind of despair at flooding themselves into this situation. And so they may choose to terminate the baby. How do you respond when you hear stories like that?
Yeah. Look, you know, Brave it's been a part of creating our culture is we're independent of the choice debate and we serve to exist after that fact. And really, if a young person is experiencing this and they're expecting and going to be parenting, then we will help them to be able to find out how they can connect to education, how they can have that support. But then you also hear those stories, and like we said, we don't advise on that. However, there is those stories when you can see that women can be okay. I guess that's a helpful thing to be able to look at and to see, well, you know, you've just said yourself, Justine, from reading on the website that we have one director who was a mum at 15 and she's doing a third year law now.
In your experience as connected with the Catholic Church, people were a little bit like nonplussed about what to do with you.
Yeah.
How can people of faith be helpful to people in this situation, or how are they helpful already in ways that sort of go beyond the sort of ways that we hear that pro-lifers and people of faith tend to only care about the life within the womb and not outside it. Sometimes it's a deserved reputation. But
yeah, absolutely. And there is a place, absolutely, for that. And I think, though, certainly for Brave, it has been, whilst we saw debates happen, that we have seen a culture then that becomes really distracted. And so then when we're becoming distracted by these debates, which are very important, but they're not where Brave is focused, that we actually, that comes at the compromise of not creating strategies and pathways for some 9,000 young women in Australia, that 79% are on long-term welfare and high risk-taking activities, creating those pathways, because we all of a sudden find ourselves in a situation where we've got to continue to be in these distracted debates. And so Brave has been really purposeful in making sure that we are there, you know, to serve after that fact, that we are there to support expecting and parenting teens, and we will help you in whatever way is possible with your own community, engaging that community capacity to be able to help. So I think as far as any person being able to help in expecting and parenting teen, the number one thing, like what Mr. Scheel said to me, and my faith was so important, and I, you know, I did know that deep down, and maybe that did have a big bit to do with me saying, you know, it felt like I was going to brush my teeth. I just knew I was going to continue in this way. But the other thing that was important was Mr. Scheel saw who I was. He saw who I was. He called out the strengths of Bernadette Kennedy back then. And I think that if we can do that for any person that's experiencing crisis or an experience like finding out that they're pregnant and reminding them of the strengths that you can see in them, then they know that anything can be possible. And then you've got a foundation to start a good conversation. I think people in the church can do that really well. I'm the benefactor of that at this part of my career at 43 with the incredible, Anglican Deaconess Women's Flourish initiative, and having their investment into me, seeing who I am, not even what is happening, but who I am as a woman, the strengths that I have in me, and being able to foster and being able to nurture and being able to call that out for this chapter and the ones to follow. And so it's ongoing. These types of attributes that we can actually see displayed in the person that we have the privilege of, you know, being able to talk to in a moment, You cannot underestimate the importance of speaking that life about who someone is.
You've just heard Bernie refer to Anglican Deaconess Ministries, or ADM. As part of ADM's annual funding event in 2018, Bernie was awarded a grant for her work connected to Brave Foundation.
Now, to finish this off, do you remember Bernie's dad? The last we heard of him, he'd had a very public meltdown at the news that 16-year-old Bernie was pregnant. That's not how his story ended, though.
When Damien was born, my dad totally changed his life. So he went from a point of not, being very angry, like I talked about, not talking to me. And then at the end of my pregnancy, he gave me a mother baby care book, and it just said, "Dear Bern, I know you'll be a great mum. Love, Dad." And so that was sort of the first really lovely interaction that we'd had in a long time. And then Dad radically changed his life when Dame was born, and he started running, he stopped, gambling, and he stopped drinking, and he stopped, not that he drank on the weekends, but just his whole lifestyle changed. And anyway, then he actually was training for, it was a Melbourne Marathon. He was doing marathons every year for 5 or 6 years, I think it was, after Damien, when Damien was little. And he had a massive heart attack and he died, and that was training in Melbourne. But what was amazing in looking at that time, Justine, and this impact from this little boy, perhaps, that helped Dad look to have this life that embraced being kind to people and his own journey, I guess, of spirituality, I guess. But there was over 1,000 people at his funeral, and there were 6 priests and 1 bishop that celebrated his funeral. And I didn't realise it, but he'd started heading up the Catholic Charismatic Renewal in those 5 years. And, and just like every person he met, he just tried to help their tomorrow be a little bit better. And so he was the most incredible grandfather, the most incredible dad for those 5 years after Damien was born, that actually having a dad like that for 5 years is probably more than a day you might get in 90 years for some other people in their dad. So I'm just so grateful for that, and it's a very precious story to me.
Now, Justine, this story is an incredible reminder, actually, of how one life, in this case, little baby Damien, can have such an incredible impact on the lives of countless others. On Bernie, on the young mums that are now connected to Braves networks, and even, as we just movingly heard, his granddad. You've been listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity with me, Simon Smart, and Justine Toe.
And you can find out more about Brave Foundation and donate at bravefoundation.org.au. You may also want to check out Bernie's book, Brave Little Bear. So we'll post a link on the website.
Next week on Life and Faith.
There could be a sense in which our compulsion to give ourselves away in a story, in a memoir, will actually only ever fully find its hope when we are heard by that audience, right? When we have a sense that we have been seen and known by that audience. Like you could sell 100,000 copies of your memoir and be on the New York Times bestseller list, and yet you could still feel unknown by the one that you are most needing and longing to be known by.